Very good. It's now 3 o'clock. So time to begin the, I don't know what you call this, a continual meditation class. And to let people know once more that we have two classes every Saturday afternoon. The beginner's meditation class, and that's held next door by, today, by Jeff Law. Very nice man. And this is the ongoing class. And the ongoing class means this is for those who know a little bit about meditation. And I usually begin the class by just mentioning a few tips about how to meditate. And then we do a 45 minute, started with guided meditation, and we go off to delve deeper into the peace and silence in your own minds. And this is like teaching us, learning just how to meditate, which is always one of those things it's very, 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 very helpful to be able to do. And in order to be able to develop that meditation, one of the things is we have so many opportunities. I came here a bit early, the clocks are always a bit confusing for me here. One clock says one time, another clock says another time, because we don't really to attach to time in this place. Sometimes it's long, sometimes it's short, but anyway, it's roughly about 3 o'clock now, so the time to begin. And when I was waiting there, I just remembered one of those beautiful little ideas which you can cultivate in your mind to help with meditation, what I call the in-between moments of life. You arrive in a place and it's early, whatever you come from hasn't yet begun, and so you're waiting here. What do you do with that time? I am very fortunate, very blessed, very lucky in this life, because I don't have a mobile phone. If I had a mobile phone, you see people coming in here and they start texting or just finding out what's going on. So it's nice to be free from the control of the internet. And because of that, you have many, it's among many sort of moments which are in between moments of my life. You've arrived somewhere, you can't go anywhere yet, so what do you do? It's that opportunity to sit there and just do some little meditation. The meditation is not doing anything, it's learning how to relax in this moment and allow the body and the mind to be at peace. Later on you'll have to use the body and the mind, but right now you're sitting down, nothing to do in this moment, in this life, and you learn to take those opportunities of rest and relaxation, because they're very hard to find in this world. People are always asking you to do things. There's so much on your plate, so much on your agenda, so many jobs and duties to perform. And sometimes we always like to fill up every moment of our life with doing something, with some task to perform. But meditation goes in the opposite direction. It's not trying to get something or perform something or obtain something. It's learning how to go in the opposite direction, how just to relax and allow things to vanish and disappear. It reminds me of one of the greatest teachings which my first meditation teacher, Ajahn Chah, taught me. He said, you meditate not to get something, not to attain things, but to get rid of things. It's like a cleansing of the body with all of its accumulated tension and even toxins, you might say, to allow that body to become loose and free, free of burdens, to lose things. And the same with meditation, not to attain more achievements of the mind, being able to sit for 30 minutes or 40 minutes or however many minutes. It's not to get anything, it's to learn how to let go of things, to be more free, to have less baggage. And by the baggage, you know what I mean, it's like, I just saw someone wheeling in a trolley. Those trolleys are really heavy. Do you wheel trolleys with you in life? All those burdens and duties and jobs you have to do, either today or later on in your life, that sort of all those plans, all that busyness which you have to do. Sometimes I come back from overseas or from the eastern states yesterday afternoon, And my baggage, where is it? This is my baggage. Wherever I go, this is my travel baggage. It's very good having this as your travel baggage. Okay, I only went over to the east, Melbourne and Canberra for a few days, but this is my baggage. It's much more peaceful, beautiful, simple, having this as your only carry baggage. So when I go on international flights, again, this is my baggage. And too many times, people in Perth Airport, I think they must know me now, because they used to always say, "Where's your baggage, sir?" And said, "That all you got?" I said, "Yeah." They said, "Why?" "Because I'm a monk." They said, "Oh, well done." Even they appreciate seeing a monk who's supposed to have few belongings, actually having few belongings. And being able to travel, it's so beautiful, you just put it through the machine, and off it goes, and then you're through. You don't have to lug all this stuff with you through airports. Lug all this stuff when you go from, you know, the car or the train into the airport. You don't have to carry so much. It's much lighter. So I love those similes in life, having few things which you have to carry around. All of your anxieties about what you have to do in the future. All those jobs which you're supposed to do tomorrow. Tomorrow has not arrived, you're here in this moment. So see if you can enjoy this moment without needing to be concerned at all with the baggage of the future. But even the baggage of the past. My goodness, people remember a lot about what happened years ago, and even more years ago, and even more years ago. You'd think the older you are, the more burdened you are, because you have so many more things to remember. As a monastic, we learn how to let go of the past. This is, I remember just going to give a talk in a mental health seminar over in Singapore some years ago. And the topic we were talking about, discussing, was Alzheimer's disease. And they were saying that, how would you know what Alzheimer's disease is? And they said, well, a couple of the definitions, it was a psychiatrist telling me this in Singapore, a couple of the definitions were that you lose the memory of the past, you don't worry about the future, and you become socially disengaged. And I went, uh-oh, that's what I'm teaching so many other people to do. Not worry about the past, not worry about the future, and have some solitude, some time for yourself to be socially disengaged. So I admitted to that, that I teach people to be... No, I did not admit to that. But nevertheless, you can see that ability just to be free of the past and be free of the future and to spend time by yourself, that is not acknowledged as a socially healthy thing to do by many people in this world. But I think you will all know it's a beautiful thing to do in this world. You come in here, you close your eyes, there's many people in this room, but you don't talk to each other, you don't look at each other. It's a time of social disengagement. And it's a time where we deliberately forget the past, be free of it. The difference between having Alzheimer's or dementia and meditating, well, the only real difference there is actually just thinking for a moment. I'm sure you can work this out. Meditating, dementia, can you rearrange the words of dementia and make it into a word describing meditation? There's an M, there's a D, there's a D, there's a T. But anyhow, that connection is only just a bit of a joke. But nevertheless, this is what we're doing in meditation, in order to be free when we want to. The difference is between meditating and that freedom. We can choose to remember the past if we wish to, but we don't have to. We can choose to plan for the future if we need to, but it's not obligatory. And we can choose to be by ourselves if we want, or with others. And we never feel guilty if we are alone and peaceful. We have the confidence to take that time out whenever it's needed. That's one of the things which meditation does. It changes our values and what's appropriate and what's valuable in others. You know, I was just mentioning this when I was over in Canberra a couple of days ago, how important it is and what a great gift it is to others to take this time out. People will think that, oh, you're just meditating, what's that going to help other people with? You should be doing something in this world. In the meditation, and well, look, in the weekend, many of you have jobs during the week, and in the weekend there's so much to do. What are you doing just going to the Buddhist Society and chilling out and relaxing and just meditating? Why are you doing that when you could be helping at home? Remind me of that story, it's many years ago, of this man who always wanted to go on one of these weekend retreats which we were holding. And he'd always ask his wife, he said, can I go on a weekend retreat? And she said, no, of course you can't. You've got to look after the children. You've got your jobs to do over the weekend, to fix the gutters, to tidy up the shed. And I've got so many things to do. I need your help. You can't go and just be selfish and go on a retreat for the weekend. No. So he said, okay, I understand. And so he stayed at home. A couple of weeks later, when there's another weekend retreat, he asked again, can I go on a weekend retreat? She said, no. Mother-in-law's coming over, we need to tidy up the rooms, we need to do that extra washing, we need some more stuff in the house, and the gardening needs to be done. No, you can't go. And that's what it was like every time he asked for a meditation, time off for the weekend to do a meditation retreat. Until eventually, she got so frustrated with him. Can I go on a meditation retreat this weekend? And that's when she said, okay, you go off on your meditation retreat, you leave me with the housework, with the washing, with the ironing, with the cleaning and the kids and with this and with that. And he took that as a yes, and off he went. The reason I tell this story, which I've told many times, when he came back home after just 2 days, just being with himself, he was such a lovely husband afterwards. He was so improved. And when it came time for the next retreat, he never needed to ask. She gave him the money and sent him off. Which is one of those true stories. Spending time by yourself is not abrogating your duties to others. It's an important gift which you can give to the people you love. You do need rest, time out, what you might call holiday. And that holiday is sometimes best spent just with yourself, understanding, feeling yourself, understanding just if you're tired, how you are tired, learning how to overcome that tiredness. If you are stressed, being able to release that stress. When we learn how to release that stress, we become far better human beings afterwards, with more time for others, being able to be kinder to others. And this is one of the reasons why meditation is never to be regarded as a selfish activity, but a way of like giving for others. You're letting go of stuff. Letting go of your stress, your worries, your concerns, your tiredness, and also your mental weakness. I know that when I am very, very tired, I've had a good rest since yesterday, when I am very tired, you know, the brain doesn't want to work clearly, it just wants to relax. But when you're energized, you know, you're working, as they say, on all pistons firing. And you feel like that, you're more alert and more alive. And that's a great help for other people. You can be much more caring when you're energized. So that's what we learn how to do here. To relax to the max. Yeah, it is true that sometimes when you relax, some of you are already very tired and you may feel sleepy. But the antidote to that sleepiness is always joy, that you're enjoying the meditation you're doing, you see its value. There's so many times in my life when I've been enjoying things so much I never feel tired. I first saw that when I was only 18, and I was in a fishing boat off the coast of the Caribbean, just being up all night, But then just watching the sunrise over the Caribbean Sea in the early morning. And I was really dead tired, but I could not stop watching the sunrise because it was incredibly beautiful. And I realized from those experiences that sometimes life is just so joyful, so beautiful. There's no way you want to waste that with sleep. The beauty, the joy energizes your mind. So in meditation, if you start to get very peaceful, very still, not much is happening, it seems, in your mind, look for the beauty, the joy there, the freedom there. And once you get to know that freedom, that joy, then you don't fall asleep in meditation. It's gorgeous, the stillness, the peace, the beauty, the energy. That beauty and energy of meditation is not like the beauty and energy of just what we call it, having three or four strong cups of coffee. It's not like just, you know, when you're watching a football match or something and your team has scored the winning goal. That's a kind of madness. But the joy when you're so peaceful, so still, and you appreciate it and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's the sort of joy which I first got to know when you started listening to classical music, where you get this wonderful sense of like poetry where somebody writes something so beautifully. It's an inspirational, deep sense of what real beauty is, and that type of happiness lasts. And you can just be meditating, just watching your breath or watching these beautiful lights which come up in the mind eventually, and they're gorgeous. And that energy is what makes you into a very beautiful, deep meditator. You can sit there for hours. You don't have to be a monk or a nun to do that. Lay people do that. And it refreshes you. Afterwards, you can go and do amazing work, whatever that happens to be. And you have so much more inner resources of time, kindness, and patience. So I'm telling you all the tricks of how this works. So during the meditation, which I will lead in a few minutes, it was important to recognize. I often ask you, how do you feel? Can you see the delight in a relaxed body? Can you experience the delight in stillness, in peace? A joyful experience. And once you can notice that, you never feel sleepy during the meditation. In fact, it's like you're waking up. Okay, so I keep going on for too long as usual. But anyway, now we can do some meditation. So if you aren't sitting in a comfortable position yet, please adjust your posture and get it nicely comfy. And close your eyes if you have not already. And with your eyes closed, see how aware you can be of your body. It is like your home, your real home. The walls and the doors and the carpets and ceilings, that's just the outside. But this body, you take it around with you 24/7. How does your body feel? This is your real home. The car, if you own one, that's a wonderful thing, very convenient. But it's in this body in which you really travel. So you wouldn't go in a car which was faulty or an aircraft which was liable to break down and crash. So see if you can look at your body and care for it. This is your real vehicle, your real car. your real home inside this body. And as usual, I first of all just observe my feet, furthest part of my body from my head. So many Westerners in Western culture, we're obsessed with our head. We carry photographs of our head on our driving licenses and passports. That's how we recognize one another. But further from your head, your feet. Everyone's feet are different, but imagine having passport photos of your feet rather than your head. So I ask my feet, how are you? How do you feel, toes? And after a short while, I can feel the sensations there. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can't feel anything in your toes, wiggle them. You're connecting with a distant part of your own body. In order to bring up this awareness which can know parts of your body, and once that knowledge is there, you can feel them and know them. Of course, you can understand them next. Understand how your own toes feel. And be kind to them. And in the kindness, you relax everything. Spend the first couple of minutes of this meditation just relaxing my own toes. Why? It's building up the ability to be aware and kind on these different parts of my own body. Easy parts, first of all. And then later, if you have a part of the body which is aching, which is tired, which is in pain, you learn how to focus on that part of the body too, and give so much awareness and kindness. You can relax almost anything in your body. So I now move that kindfulness from my toes to my feet. How are you, feet? And I've used that little questioning, how are you? And because when I ask that of each one of you, you may not even give me an answer, but I can observe and see just how you feel, how things are in your body. I do that in my own body, because once I can see how my feet are, then I can either move something or just relax those feet. When I relax them, I don't move. When I'm deeply relaxing them, I go beyond moving those feet. I can feel them, experience them. And just by that trial and error, I get the feedback that my feet are actually more relaxed, bringing them to a deeper state of ease. I do this with my body first of all, and later I'll do that with my mind. How to relax your own mind. Then I move up the body from my feet to my ankles. The ankles, again, people do get aches and pains in those ankles. Even things like arthritis. Inflammations and swellings inside which cause you pain and discomfort. So I'm experiencing my ankles as fully as possible and relaxing them. How do you know how to relax? Take off any tension. You're not guarding the ankles with this almost like barrier of tightness in your muscles. You're opening them up and giving them this beautiful kindness, opening the door of your heart. Now you're opening up the door of the feelings in the ankles so they can feel more free, relaxed, at ease. I usually wait, if I have time, until my ankles exhibit that beautiful feeling of relaxation, the delightful ease. There is a pleasure there, which I can perceive. And that's important, because being able to perceive the delight in relaxed parts of your body are important. It means you don't get pulled out to other things you have to deal with in life. Your own physical relaxation is the most important. And the delight helps you stay there. And relaxing your ankles deeper and deeper and deeper. And you go up your lower legs, your calves. And as you are experiencing the sensations in your calves, the muscles, the bones, the skin, you give it this beautiful kindness. I wish you well-being, happiness, comfort, ease. And you allow everything you possibly can to relax in your lower legs. So you get to your knees, you experience them, feel them. How do your knees feel right now? My own knees feel a bit tight at this moment, tense. So I just look at them with my mind and give them this kindness. If it really is kindness, then my knees will relax. Just if I have kindness and give it to you, when you come in this facility, you relax too. But I'm now giving kindness to my own knees. Experiencing them now. And experiencing them, it's hard to find the words, but like opening out. By being a sense of free, not squashing up anything to try and protect some area. Not overreacting, but being loose and easy and free. And when I've been aware of my own knees, and then they're more relaxed when I started, then I can go further up to my thighs. Big muscles, but they don't usually cause me any problems. But nevertheless, I acknowledge them. How are you? How do you feel? And I learn how to relax them. I never thought you could relax big muscles like thighs. But when I am aware of them and give them that kindness, I can feel them start to kind of open out, not be tight, not be tense, and feel the delightful feeling. I'm actually acknowledging them, aware of them, kind to them. And they do relax. It feels good. I get then to my butt, sitting on this cushion. And today, even though I tried to be aware before I began, the cushion I'm sitting on is just not centered, so I'm going to move. Because I know from experience, if I am aware of a place in my body and it needs adjusting and I don't, that will get very painful, spoil the meditation. But if I can adjust it, and it's as if my buttocks, I say thank you. if they're individual existences, individual beings, and I'm being kind to them. And they respond by relaxing so deeply. My buttocks feel really nice now. It's like they're grateful that I care for them. And then from my buttocks to my waist. How does your waist feel? Whatever you need to do to make it more comfortable. I say this because it works so well for me. I just stretch my back. I've seen animals doing this in the forest. And then you stretch your back, you arch that waist, and then it feels a nice rush. I forget what the chemical is, but it feels nice. And having arched my back, which is through willpower, so doing, then I let go. And my waist and back go into a beautiful position of comfort. That's why I bring comfort to my waist and my back. But then I go inside. Inside the digestive tract. As I scan up the body. Scan like these machines I have in hospital, but this is your mindfulness doing the scanning. You can feel just how your stomach, tummy, whatever you call it, is. I scan upwards until I reach the stomach itself. But if there's any time I can feel any tightness, then I relax it to the max. I'm just scanning up my digestive tract. Feels okay. I get to my stomach. Relax that as well. Just through kindness. I care for parts of my body. I visualize, and the visualization may not be accurate according to medical books, but I can feel my stomach. I relax it. Don't hold anything tightly. Go up past that to my lungs. I don't force anything. My job is just to be kind, saying I care for you. And then everything tends to relax and become at ease. I go past there, up to my heart, to your breasts. Giving everything a nice boost of kindness. And relaxation. And pass the heart up to my shoulders. When I get to my shoulders, I don't know why this happens, but my shoulders seem always tense when I get there. So I need to relax them. And this is one of the ways, and it's a good way, because not only does it work, but it teaches others like how to let go. I scrunch up my shoulders, hold them tightly. You do when you scrunch things up. And then I let go. When I let go, those muscles, they go back to deeper relaxation than when I started. And everybody knows how to do that. And that's the little teaching I give them on how to let go. And you can learn from that example how to let go of other tightnesses and tensions in your body and even in your mind. So then I go down my arms, scanning as I go, picking up any feelings, sensations in my own arms, which are usually really comfy. Go past my elbows, make sure they are fine. And if there is any unusual feeling of tightness or tension, it's like I give that kindness. You don't have to protect yourself, I'll protect you. Relax to the max. Till I get to my hands and fingers. I'm aware of those fingers, but they're so comfortable that I can hardly feel them. They've almost disappeared already. And that's the job of this mindfulness and kindness. You relax so deeply that you can't feel many of these parts of the body which was you're so aware of to begin with. Once they're comforted, once you relax them, they disappear. That's what this meditation is about. Learning how to let things go so they vanish. And so then I go back up to my neck, making sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. I move my head forward and back, the left and the right, until the neck feels comfortable because the head is well balanced. And then I relax the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. So they're at ease. I like that feeling. It is delightful. Then I notice my whole body sitting here. That kindfulness, which has been scanned up my whole body, down to my fingertips, up to my top of my head, has done its job of improving this quality of awareness and kindness, and being in delight. I enjoy doing this. That's why I don't wander off anywhere. I'm here with this body at every moment. There's no restlessness, there's no tiredness, because I enjoy this. So just I enjoy the relaxation of the whole body now. Feel the whole thing. And I always wait here. That's already come up. So you feel the enjoyment, the delight of a relaxed body. It actually feels good. And the reason why I wait for that, because it takes me deeper into relaxation. Everything seems to be in good working order. And also during this time, I've been in the present moment. You can't know how the body feels a minute ago. You have a memory, yes, but the memory is sometimes not accurate. You cannot foretell how the body is going to feel. Those experiences of bodily awareness have to be in the present moment. A lot of times it's too difficult to give those descriptions, words to describe those feelings. That's why it helps me get into silence. So once I know the delight of a relaxed body, then I can let my body go. Start focusing on the inner world of the mind. How peaceful am I right now? What I find is that if I can be aware of the joy in this moment, the delight right here, then I'm not bothered by past and future things. But if I'm not enjoying this moment, then my mind will wander off, looking for happiness somewhere, because it's not finding satisfaction right now. So I look in this moment, and it's deeply satisfying. That's why my mind doesn't wander anywhere. It likes being here. And the longer I notice this, I feel that the past and future have disappeared. They kind of feel irrelevant compared to the peace, the delightful peace of being here right now. It's not as if I concentrate on the present moment. It's not as if I hold on to the present moment. It feels more like the present moment holds on to me. It's just too nice. And then I go deeper. I notice the silence. I learned a long time ago that words can't describe these emotional feelings of stillness and peace. So I discard the words. You don't describe or measure anything. You just enjoy the measureless silence. The words and activities of the mind start to disappear. And you enjoy what you're experiencing. It's delightful being still. Often you become aware of your breathing. I give that little tip, and then it's more likely you will be aware of the breathing. And you can stay with that for long periods of time, enjoying everything to the max. But don't want anything for the future. Just being here right now at peace, still, gives you so much joy. I will be quiet now, so yourself and me can carry on in silence. Now, getting close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel inside? How peaceful are you? Could you sustain awareness on the peace? The more delightful it is, the easier it is to keep your attention there. You get more and more peaceful. And how does your body feel? When it feels free, you're not asking anything from it. It just tends to vanish. Now it comes back online again, as they may say. My body feels really good. I am now going to ring that gong 3 times. When it finishes sounding for the 3rd time, that is a signal to open your eyes and come out from the meditation. So now we usually have questions. If you'd like to bring up the tablet, so I can use the tablet first of all, unless anyone has a question they would like to ask first of all from the audience. Okay, let's try the ones online. Tim from Indonesia. How does the first taste of joy in meditation happen that makes you keep this practice and enjoying it? If one has been doing it without much success, what should we do? Kindly guide. Look, you say you've been doing it without much success, but that is just putting the present moment in a prison of your experiences of the past. It doesn't matter what's been happening in the past, if you've been really successful or really not successful at all in the meditation. So it's almost like you're meditating for the first time. There was a Zen monk who once made the point that we develop the idea of a beginner's mind. In other words, we can let go of all the success and failure of the past, and then we're free. And it's amazing, when you're free and you don't limit yourself by what happened in the past, it's amazing how easy it is to find things like joy. It's here. It's not something you have to learn, it's what you experience. The joy of the sense of freedom. But if you are limited by the past, trying to overcome the past, trying to do better than the past, then you're stuck in the past. So let all that past go and surprise yourself of what can happen. From Singapore, I've noticed when I start to get deep in meditation, my facial muscles will twitch and all my senses come back on immediately. How should I work through this? I think there may be a bit too much struggle doing in that meditation. But nevertheless, if your muscles start twitching, be aware of the feeling of fear. Because that's often what happens. When the mind is really still, you can't feel the body. It's almost like the body overreacts and it wants you to feel it. So it twitches, it moves or something, just to grab your attention. It's like a child in bed at night. Sometimes it wakes up, it has a nightmare, and the mummy has to get up and just to stroke its hair and just give it reassurance. And then a child can go fully asleep again. It's like, I'm not saying that when the body disappears it's asleep. It's all settled down, so the mind is alert. So when you start to get deep into meditation, it is just through fear your muscles in the face start to twitch, start to do something to gain your attention. So just be like calm to them and kind to them. It's okay, facial muscles. Settle down, everything is safe. And that extra kindness and fearlessness, I don't mean like some super soldier or something, just nothing can harm me. Just that sense of this is half of the course, the body is just overreacting. So calm, settle down, everything will be fine. From Germany, why the emphasis to meditate for Nibbana? Is practice and meditation not good enough? Being kind and gentle, making peace, and what's that happening? Wanting Nibbana is not craving. Of course it's craving. And a lot of times, it's a lovely question, because people meditate for Nibbana, but they don't really have an idea what Nibbana really is. Will you be happy when you get there? Or will you think, you encouraged me to get Nibbana, now I'm there, and you will sue me, or sue the Buddhist society, or sue the Buddha. I think I already made the point when I started this session today, that we're meditating not to gain things, not to attain things. We're meditating for things to disappear, to vanish. Now that is what we really should be meditating for peace, for stillness, for freedom. What is freedom? It's a lack of things, a lack of barriers, a lack of walls which are too high to climb over, a lack of sense of being who you are, always trying to fulfill other people's intentions of trying to be a better person, trying to achieve more, trying to be better, get rid of your faults, all those other things which we sometimes are asked by others to do. No, it's not a doing something. It's opening the door of your heart to this moment. It's not a doing, it's an accepting. It's an embracing. It's a non-judging. It's allowing things to vanish. So we don't meditate to attain things. We meditate in order to let things vanish and disappear. So it's a good question, because if anyone is meditating here in order to get something, to be a stream winner, a soul one, or even further, to get in deep meditations, to get psychic powers, to be able to read minds or whatever, you try that and it doesn't work. And so what happens is after a while you learn that is the wrong way to practice. If you meditate here just to relax to the max, as I've often said, to keep the mind still. If you want something, you can't be still. And then eventually everything just settles down, becomes very, very clear. Just like the old seminar, I keep on doing this too many times. You know, what is meditation? It's learning how to be still. This is your mind. You put it down, and it becomes still all by itself. No effort. And the more still it becomes, especially in this world where there's so much activity, and the more beautiful it is. If you've ever gone to a forest or a mountain and it's been perfectly still, how beautiful is that? I always like to give examples. And I recall just being, after 7 years as a monk, I had the opportunity to visit my mother in the UK. And I thought at Christmas time would be the best. A stupid idea because it's freezing cold at Christmas time. And this particular winter, it was exceptionally cold. Minus 26 degrees outside. Is that right? Yes, I think that was what I remember correctly. A really weird cold spell. And because I was only visiting, had no responsibilities at all, I put as many clothes and boots on as I could find. I went to walk outside in the fields, in the forest, in this really heavy snow. And I will never forget that. You have to be mad to go out in such cold. And I was the only one out there. There was no animals in the forest, no birds flying through the air. They were all hibernating. Even the airports were shut down, so there was no noise from any flights overhead. No cars could travel on that road. It was too thick with snow. And I was the only one there. There's no wind. And when I was in that forest, when I stopped treading the snow and crunching that snow, it's like the whole world stopped. It was total silence. No sound. That was gorgeous. That was seared into my mind forever, the beauty of such silence. I was rugged up enough that I didn't freeze to death, but I couldn't stay out there too long. But it was beautiful just how quiet the world, the universe was. And that silence is what is beautiful. You can appreciate it, you can taste it, it's gorgeous. Nothing asking you or telling you what to do. Nothing to judge. Nothing to grab onto. Just real deep peace. So that's what silence and peace is. And once you get to know it, not be afraid of it, but be able to listen to it, embrace it. A lot of times it challenges people because you're not used to those experiences. They may be wonderful, beautiful, but if you're not used to it, what is this? What am I supposed to do? Nothing. Yeah, but what? Nothing. Relax and stop doing stuff and enjoy. And these are beautiful experiences in meditation. You can really get into it and get off on it. That's why often that we build retreat centers or we build monasteries, almost of all traditions, in silent places, and away from the busyness of the world. And I often say it's wonderful being in Australia because the forests in Australia are much more peaceful than the forests in, say, Thailand or Sri Lanka. There's so many animals in those forests, and even the cicadas, you know, in the morning, that can be so loud. But we don't have them so much in the forests of Australia. And sometimes you can't hear a sound. Gorgeous. That's one of the reasons the monks, I encouraged them to do this. They gave me a gift once, and I really thanked them enormously for building me my cave. And I go in there, and it's totally silent. Shut the doors, there's no sound from outside, no sound from inside. And you can hear some beautiful meditations simply because it's quiet. And there's many other parts of monastery which are quiet too. If you ever go into that meditation hall, it's beautifully silent in there. Right now you're in the middle of the city. What sounds can you hear? Not much. Is that delightful? I think it's gorgeous. Silence is golden. Beautiful. Okay, I'm just rabbiting on about silence. It doesn't make sense, that's an oxymoron. But anyway, I'm trying to establish that feeling of respect. Any other questions people have? From the floor here? Okay. So I can end the session now. It's almost 4:15. And then we can do what we need to do. There's somebody visiting, a person who made an appointment from the Sri Lankan consul. So, was it 4:30? Yeah. Yeah, so I don't have too much time to answer questions, but if you need to, please come up afterwards.